In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 70. I guess you could title it, we're finally here. Season starting, John, after all that lockout garbage.
And only 1 week late. I feel like after all that crap, it would have been like a month. A month, yeah.
Do you like your team?
You know what? I do. I like the fact that nobody's hurt. I like that. I'm not a big believer in Joey Gallo. I'm not a fan of him, but I feel like if they stay healthy, they might be able to get around him. But again, like, you know, is he going to come off the bench and do anything for you? I'm still kind of hung up on him. But again, health comes down to health. If guys are healthy, they should do all right. I mean, it kind of sucks that DJ's been kind of forced out a little bit of the lineup in a way. He's kind of been pushed into a bench player with the moves they made.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks. But again, you know, like John Sterling said, if someone gets hurt every day. So, we'll see.
You know, for the Red Sox, obviously some pitching issues, and Sale, who knows when we'll see him. You're relying on Jackie Bradley, who's a career 230 hitter. Who knows if how much he's going to play, maybe a platoon player. I mean, there's some questions across the board. I think both teams are good. What I wanted to ask you, you forwarded me before the episode, and I can't figure out if Major League Baseball is doing this for marketing.
Seriously.
Because they basically projected a four-way tie for first in the American League yep. East and had all four teams making the playoffs.
Yep, 88 wins, 74 losses, and each team, obviously, you know, the four we're talking about. And, I was kind of, like, blown away. Obviously, you know, Seattle could throw a wrench in that
right.
somehow. But, I mean, could you imagine that, given the fact that, you know, the way the season went last year, right, and everybody's predicting the Blue Jays to be the top team in the AL East this year, and they didn't even make the playoffs last year, and they, what, won, like, 91 games?
Right.
I mean, that's crazy. So think about it. These head-to-head matchups with these guys, if that pans out, is going to be insane, because I don't even want to know how the jockeying of the position is going to go as far as home field advantage and all that. But, you know, again, expanding the playoffs and matching four teams from the AL East, all right. the four teams that, you know, some would say are four of the six best teams
so
in baseball.
So what is it now? What's the expansion mean now for playoff teams?
12 teams, so everybody division winner makes it, plus okay. three wild card.
Okay, so with that, with the new lineup for playoffs, that can
happen.
That's
why I say Seattle could throw a wrench into it by, you know, I mean, which they are projected to be a hell of a team, and on paper they look very exciting. So I say they could throw a wrench because they could win a wild card out of the AL West if the Astros win the West, that being said, which I hope they don't.
Where's the trash can?
I guess that I can't, and again, like, at being 50, I can't get over, like, what's old school and what's a rational argument. I can't stand the expansion of playoffs. I really don't.
You'll say that now, and for Major League Baseball, they will. If this pans out, like you said, marketing ploy, right?
Right.
If this pans out, what could be better? Yankees, yeah, Dodgers, World Series, Red Sox, thing, Dodgers, World
sure,
Series.
But the hardest thing to deal with the last few years is that you go on this emotional roller coaster just to make the playoffs.
Right.
And then you play one game and it's over in a second.
But that's gone, though.
I know. I mean, but it being replaced with dilution. So now you get a situation where even more than ever, a team cannot be great but get hot late, or kind of half mail it in till the trade deadline, then load up and make a run, which I don't love. And I used to, listen, when it was the winner of the American League played the winner of the National League for the World Series, that was too exclusive, right? Because especially in the modern era, we right. can't handle that many quote-unquote losers. But, and then division winners, okay. And then two wildcard teams, even that felt diluted. So the dilution is what I have a problem with, because then a team, you know, and it's not going to be a St. Peter's type, you know, Cinderella story. It's going to be a team that you're like...
You mean the Marlins aren't going to squeak in?
The point is like a team is going to end up winning the World Series that you really don't think deserves it.
I mean, the Braves won the World Series last year. No one thought they were going
to
win.
Well, that's true. And which brings me to another thing that could change, maybe.
But going back to the playoff thing, yeah. I mean, you say you hate the one game playoff, but that this solves that problem. Now, maybe it dilutes it, but wouldn't you rather see a playoff format where no matter what skin you got in the game, it's not decided by one game? Because I'll argue the other point. I mean,
the first round's 2 out of 2?
Yeah, 2 out of 3. Because I'll argue the other point. I mean, yeah, baseball, 162-game season, right? But I don't care what you say. It always is exciting when it's either an extra game or that last game of the season decides a team's season.
True.
Now, it could be even more exciting if there's 2 teams or 3 teams. Now, with this format, it could be 6 teams. I mean, remember last year what it came down to? It was nuts. I mean, there was all sorts of stupid formulas where it'd be a 4-way tie here and a 3-way tie here and this and that. Can you imagine now what could happen?
Right.
I mean, I hope they're not going to condense it. You could play an extra 4 games
or
something.
There's just a lot of teams that I think won't be deserving of the conversation that'll be in the conversation. But your point is well taken. And then I think of a team like the Mets, which, you know, if Scherzer and DeGrom can be healthy, like, they could do any sort of damage in the
playoffs. Why is everybody always so excited about Jacob DeGrom? I mean, has he ever thrown more than like 115 innings?
Because when he's right, he's
well, that's everybody in Major League Baseball, usually, when you're right. When Joey Gallo's right, he hits 45 home runs and bats 280.
Okay.
I'm just tired of people always like so excited. If you looked at all the pundits at the beginning of the season, right, they all had Jacob DeGrom, the best player in Major League Baseball. That's who you're going to take, basically, in your fantasy draft or whatever. He was the number one pitcher. He was the number one everything other than like Trout or whoever, right? But he's never, ever, ever like sealed the deal and finished it out. I mean, look at Cole last year, hamstring injury down the stretch, useless. Right? Jacob DeGrom was useless from the beginning of July for the Mets. And he's already useless, basically, if you think about it, till the beginning of July this year.
I feel like John Senecal.
I'm just tired of everyone excited about Jacob DeGrom all the time.
In spring training and during the lockout, he's just throwing 60 miles an hour meatballs. And then we start the season. And
you should be lucky I'm not banging on Chris Sale right now.
You're bringing it. I absolutely love it. And I do want to put a pin in fantasy because I want to talk about it with you for a few minutes before we get out of the episode. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. The one other thing I want to say is, everyone debates about how relevant or irrelevant the start of the season is. They say over 162, it's not relevant. But
you can't win the playoffs in April, but you can lose them in April.
Right, and then the Yankees have had some bad starts and really, really come back and all of those things. But if you start, 2-10, you have to go through the record of what it's going to take to finish in first place. You have to play lights out. Having said that, I will point this out for the Boston Red Sox. In the first month, right, in April, they have Toronto 7 times. They have Tampa 3 times. They have an incredibly improved Minnesota 4 times. And the Yankees 3. And they have Detroit 3. They have a tough schedule. And if they can even, honestly, if the Red Sox are 500 at the end of April, I will be thrilled. Because that is brutal.
That's a buzzsaw. Now, like last year, the Yankees had that kind of buzzsaw with Tampa. And because remember, the Yankees Red Sox last year didn't play until like June.
Right.
Right. So they had Tampa, they had the Blue Jays, and the Yankees last April were 12-14. They were under 500, and everyone was already counting them out. And we all know how that went. They played like crap basically the whole season and then squeaked into the playoffs. Now, that being said, this year, the Yankees do look like they have an easier schedule in April, having the Orioles, I guess, 6 or 7 times. You only have the Red Sox 3, like you said, Blue Jays 3 times, and then they got the Indians, who on paper aren't that great.
But do you think it matters? Do you think it matters?
Absolutely, I think it matters, because look at what happened last year. I just said it. The Yankees were 12-14 in April last year, and they had the monkey on their back the whole season.
There was so much pressure all year.
All year.
Yeah, because of that monkey.
And we just got done talking about they're predicted to be in playoffs already. All 4 teams.
Right.
So, again, like you said, if they don't, the buzzsaw is on the Red Sox this year in April, I say. I think going by what you just said on paper, yeah. But the same thing. So, hopefully, for your sake, they're not fighting like the Yankees were fighting all last year.
Well, I hope not. Again, I'd be happy with 500. I honestly, but you just don't want, 6-14 or whatever. I want to talk about, for laying out the rundown of the rest of this episode, I want to talk a little bit about a fantasy because we're in a league together. I want to touch on that. And then I want to finish with Theo Epstein and his conversation with Jason Stark about rule changes and such. It's just a fascinating conversation with Theo, who clearly is so bright and so articulate, and he kind of changed my mind on something. We'll get to that. But before we get to that, you had one feel-good Yankee story wanted to get to.
So, yeah, the Yankees, last year it was Lucas Lucchi, relief pitcher who was a journeyman, made the Yankees. This year, Toms River, New Jersey native, not Todd Frazier, who just retired. This is Ron Marinaccio or Marinaccio, however you want to say it.
Two C's.
Great jawline, if you see his picture. He looks like Clark Kent.
Handsome man.
Handsome dude, right? So he's going to be in the Yankees bullpen, 26 years old, graduated from Toms River High School 2013.
Was he on one of their little league teams that like won it all?
No, that was the Todd father, who just retired. But anyways, lifelong Yankees fan. Grew up a Yankees fan. Pictures of him in the bleacher creatures, going to all the games. More games than Isaiah Kiner-Falefa since he grew up in Hawaii, but... Anyways, yeah, so great feel-good story.
Handsome kid.
Yeah, he's going to be in the back end of the Yankees bullpen. He worked his butt off in coming back during COVID and added 4 miles an hour to his fastball, in which I guess improved his changeup drastically.
I mean, Italian-American kid living in Jersey, playing for the Yankees. If he does anything decent, he's going to be on the front of the post.
He's not the Bronx kid.
Right.
But he's the Toms River, the pride of Toms River now.
We'll take it. All right, listen, I want to talk fantasy because back in the day when we worked together in local news, you had a pretty intense fantasy baseball league.
One of the money leagues, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't handle it for several reasons. One is I didn't know the young players as well as you and a bunch of others did. Number two is
we made the mistake of putting people that worked at ESPN in that league. Yeah, that was not a good idea.
Dan Marks and the likes. But the thing with baseball is that football's so easy. It's once a week.
Right.
You got your waiver day, and then you have the big draft, and that's it.
Right.
Baseball's every stinking day.
Right.
And you could fill up too much of one slot and this and that and the other. Like, it is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little worried about it. Now they let you at least set the lineup 5-6 days in advance, but with starting pitchers and so on, you don't know. So
everyone's always getting scratched and
then
stuff.
I never think to check about fulfilling their maximums. You can't just load up with pitching all the time to win your league. Are you excited to get back into it? Because you left it for a long time.
Yeah, so we did it. The one league you're talking about, we did for, I have to say, like probably 13 years. I was 13, 14 years. And for the exact reasons you were talking about, I was like, I can't do it anymore. I can't compete with people that are watching the stuff, like i.e. ESPN people. And it's just a lot of work. So I stopped doing it. And then as my kids got older, they started, you know, talking about, oh, well, why don't we do a fantasy league, you know, and just get our friends involved. And I was like, yeah, that's great. So last year we did it. And it was a weekly league. So you set your lineup at the beginning of the week and, you know, you roll with it, right? And after 2 weeks, all they did was complain because, you know, the guy was hurt. Now he can't do this. I can't pick up this guy. So I said, this year we'll do it daily. And hopefully, you know, they're not complaining that they have to follow it more strictly, you know. But again, it's not a huge buy-in or anything. But listen, I've always said fantasy baseball, if you're playing it like we're playing it, right? And there's not a ton of skin in the game. You don't got hundreds of dollars invested in it. Makes you follow the game more. And if you have some sort of TV package where you can watch multiple games, you'll find yourself flipping through and looking at the hot rookie Bobby Witt or Julio Rodriguez or those guys that you picked up. Or you'll follow your own team. What sucks is when you start rooting against your own pitchers and all that and stuff. So I don't miss that part.
The thing that struck me, besides the fact that I'm a little bit intimidated by being back in it, although with my job on the radio on a daily basis, I'll have 5 minutes to look at my team and check it on most days, is that I realize how many young players I don't know.
It's amazing.
There's a lot of guys guys that had good seasons in the last year or two who I had no idea who they were.
Yeah, and this year, so they got, I guess, like five guys out of the 2019 draft class. Torkelson, CJ Abrams, Riley Green, he's hurt. Julio Rodriguez, and I'm thinking I'm missing one other one. Yeah, I'm missing one. Oh God, whatever.
But the thing is, like, there's the three of those four.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Bobby Witt Jr. and the guy from Seattle, I heard about only because of social media, because the video went viral with him making the majors. But the other three guys I never heard of. And so that's the thing that's so fascinating, is that it's going to get me to familiarize myself with more players that I should know about. And so that's the one thing.
If those guys perform like they're supposed to, I mean, whew. Boy,
I just can't imagine. You know, I talked to on my local radio show to the manager of the Hartford Yard Goats, the AA team of Colorado, and they have a top prospect at shortstop coming into the team they're very excited about. And he's slated to be a major leaguer. And I just can't imagine being 20 and being in that position.
Yeah.
And so you talk about guys from 2019, or it's basically that's their age.
Yep.
I didn't have a job with healthcare till I was 26. I wasn't out of debt until I was 32. Like, yeah. I can't imagine the maturity it takes to handle life and stay on track. I would be partying every night. I don't know what I'd be doing.
Well, I mean, listen, a lot of these guys, you know, like Julio Rodriguez, that's all they know. I mean, they, you know, they come from Dominican Republic or whatever, and it's all baseball. But I mean, look at Ronald Acuna Jr. He's like 24 years old, and people aren't even forgot about him. He won't be back until beginning of May, but he could arguably probably be the best player in baseball. And he was hurt all last year, and the Braves won the World Series. But, I mean, he was 19 when he started in the league. And, I mean, you want to talk about a guy who's been hurt a lot and no one really even talks about it? That dude has been hurt so much in his short career between getting hit by pitches and banging into stuff and knee injuries. He's going to be exciting to see play.
He's such a bat flipper. I still have trouble with the bat flippers. But anyway, people love it. It's a young person's game, and you got to get used to the bat flipping.
Well, it's marketing, and you know, like that's what our next thing is. It's not just marketing. It's also pace of play. Okay. It's speeding up
the
game.
So let's talk about it. So Theo Epstein sits down with Jason Stark, the great Jason Stark, who wrote covered the Phillies for years, worked at ESPN for years, now with The Athletic. And basically, Theo is in charge of making the game better, which I thought I was really disappointed that this wasn't more a part of the collective bargaining agreement. But there's a bunch of stuff the players are on board with, and they have been and will continue to experiment in the minor leagues. And you can bet that this stuff is coming to the major leagues because they did a bargain that they can make these changes more quickly, and it won't be 3 to 5 years. It could do it in less than a year. So what I wanted to do was play a clip. Play a clip from the interview that that relates to the pitch clock, but more on the impact on the hitter, because the hitter can be penalized too for not being in the box soon enough. I think they have to be in the box and like looking at the pitcher within like 9 seconds or whatever. So here's what 2 minutes of what Theo Epstein said in his conversation with Jason Stark.
We don't think it's overly onerous on hitters. We think they'll still have, you know, that moment to take a deep breath, you know, glance down to the third base coach's box, get themselves, go through their little routine and get themselves prepared and ready to hit, but be attentive to the pitcher with 9 seconds on the timer. And then that's important. That gives the pitcher time to work at his rhythm with, you know, with a full 9 seconds remaining on the timer. And I'll say that, you know, this is a rule that players really adapted to quickly. And that was something that we were really locked in on is, you know, you can make a set of regulations that work great in theory, you know, that look good in paper, but if players can't adjust to it and, you know, instead of just playing the game, they're out there thinking about all these different elements of the pitch timer rule, then, you know, you haven't really gained anything. In fact, you've probably made the game worse by doing that. And so we're really interested to see how players would adjust. And, you know, the fall league is a really good example. The first couple of days of the pitch timer, of course, there were violations as pitchers and catchers and hitters alike had to get used to the rule. So I was at a game where I think it was the first day of the pitch timer. Spencer Torkelson, one of the top prospects in baseball, wasn't attentive and ready to hit with 8 seconds remaining on the clock. It was a 2-strike count, so he got the automatic strike. He struck out. Same thing happened to Tristan Casas, another top prospect, the very next day. And that, you know, that's not what we want. We don't want, you know, at bats to be decided by pitch timer violations. But I'll say this, it happened once, right? And you know, if you're a hitter and you get punched out because you haven't gotten in the box in time with 2 strikes, it tends not to happen again. And so that first week we saw a number of violations. The second week we saw fewer. And then by the time we got 3 weeks in the Arizona Fall League, there was less than half a violation per game.
So for me, John, I've always been against the pitch clock for a couple of reasons. One, mainly I thought the players would ignore it and it would never be enforced. And I thought it would be too artificial. And the argument about the shot clock in the NBA never made sense to me. But I will tell you, and I encourage people to listen to the whole interview, he kind of changed my mind on it a little bit. And I don't know if you want to react first and then I can tell you why or
no, you
what.
Go ahead.
So here's the situation. There's one thing that I hadn't thought about is that if they experiment in the minors for a year plus or in double A, I think it's definitely like
we've
required,
already seen it. I've seen it at double A games.
That as these players go to the bigs, they'll be familiar with it.
Right.
So if you unilaterally implement it in the majors when no one's seen it, they're of course going to give you the collective middle finger. But if they've already had to deal with it,
right,
then it's easier to do, and then the veterans got to deal with it or go away.
I'll say two words for you. Sticky substance, glove check, four words, but two and two. Look at what happened last year when they just all of a sudden did that. Like Max Scherzer lost his freaking mind on the mound. People were going crazy. Remember that?
Right, but then
that's what I'm saying. Like, right. Do what you're saying. And I took away, that's another thing I took away from that too. I was thinking, yeah, pitch clock, it sucks. Like, another great thing what he was talking about is, you know, they don't want it to be an inconvenience, right? They don't want the players looking at it. They don't even want the fans looking at it. They want it to be second nature. That's what you're talking about, right? And that's basically, they talked about Spencer Torkelson, one of the main prospects, getting punched out, but then it basically never happens again. These players adapt to it. It's almost like second nature. It becomes part of your routine. You walk into the box. There was one inning they talk about in particular where it was like 8 minutes longer, basically.
Yeah. The major league one.
Major league one.
The major league
equivalent. Same scenario. Right. Same scenario. 8 minutes longer because guys were walking around the box and looking back. And then there's a guy in second base and he's stepping out. He's moving right. He's moving left. He's calling the pitcher. Nobody wants to see that, right? Nobody wants to see that. The batter doesn't want to see it. The coaches don't want to see it. It just sucks for the game.
So because even with the checking with the substances with the pitchers, it sort of seemed like the umps, just sort of gave up on it. But if they actually enforce it, and they have the teeth, then Theo will be right. It'll be an uproar for 2 weeks,
yep.
And then everyone will fall in line. They have to have the guts,
yep,
to follow through. But the whole conversation he had, I really, people need to listen to all of it because there's nuances across the board. Because when they talked about how, well, because you can take so much time, the stat people say that's how you can sustain velocity when you throw.
Right.
And it's about putting balls in play. And so if you speed it up, the pitchers are maybe a little bit of a disadvantage because it's going to put more balls in play. But the hitters can't sit there and break down in their heads all the options or check their little cheat sheet or whatever. Right. And so baseball is going to be more what baseball is supposed to be. And then he also talked about in the conversation about this effort to possibly constrict how far outfielders can go back. I mean, there's, yep, statistical analysis that over the last 20 years, outfielders have gone further and further back because basically they're willing to give up a single.
Right.
To prevent a double or triple.
So what I found fascinating about two things with that, right? The outfielder thing. He thinks that would be a better and more influential change for Major League Baseball than the infield shift. Because right when they started talking about infield shifts, they said, well, what about the outfield? Just move the center fielder behind the second baseman for, right, the guy that pulls. And then they start, in the conversation, he addresses that. The other thing that I found interesting was the argument about how it's going to change the defensive player of the game. When we were growing up, shortstops and second basemen were small. They were, yeah, scrappy. They were quick. Yeah. They covered a lot of ground. And as we got older, they start looking like DJ LeMahieu does.
Right.
Bigger,
or
A-Rod, stronger,
6'4",
or A-Rod,
235.
Nomar. Even Jeter was a bigger, taller guy, right? But you take the shift and all the defensive placement out of the game, put the guys two on each side of the bag, it makes that position more athletic and more exciting. That was one thing I never even thought about, right, in the game. Now, not only does it make the game more exciting, it also changes the game because now these kids that are in high school and stuff are going to look and they're going to be like, oh man, this is a big kid. He's not really going to be cut out to be playing a shortstop or a second base. This kid's more of a third baseman now.
Huh.
So, or in college.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought of that, but I just found it fascinating that they have such statistical analysis that as the outfielders have backed up, there have been fewer, yeah, doubles and triples.
That
it was
really
fascinating because I, again, that's like,
now
I,
they are going to be doing that in extended spring training. They're going to be painting lines or cutting
feel
the
weird,
grass.
Doesn't that
longer.
Feel a little weird though? To, yeah, they said that they'll demark it by having like different colored grass cuts.
Yep.
But I also feel like it's weird. Like, you're going to put fielders in a box and they can only start in that box. It just seems strange, but I also understand the why. And the truth is that going to a four-hour baseball game stinks. Home runs are exciting, but Theo is right. Stolen bases, because they're doing the bigger bases. Stolen bases and doubles and triples and great defense. You don't get as much Herculean defense because, right, guys, they're not needing to make those plays because they're so far back.
Yep.
And so it's either singles or home runs. And so I do think that if you have to And I think I heard someone on sports radio saying you're saving the game from itself. If you let the game be unchecked, they'll always be looking for these advantages, and they will change it, and it'll eventually just be a home run derby.
Yep.
And so that's not what you want. And so I went from being like, pitch clock is so dumb, I hate it, to being like, if they actually have the guts, they have to have the guts to do it. If they have the guts to do it in 3 to 5 years, because you have to sort of ease in. I love the fact that you take these 18-year-old kids and they got to do it. They have to do it.
Yeah.
And by the time they're
second nature.
And then by the time they're 23 in the majors, they're not going to be mad.
No.
And so in 5 to 5 years, you'll only have a couple of years worth of players who don't like it and don't get used to it, and you have to live with it. Now, do you think they'll have the guts to do it?
Pitch clock.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't see why they wouldn't, because technically they've almost been doing it for 2 years in the minors. I mean, I don't see there's, like he said, there hasn't been backlash, really. You know, if there's not a backlash coming, like you said, with these players coming up, which some of these guys have already seen it, and they're going to be playing a major role, like the Torkelsons, I don't see why it would be a big deal for the guys who are already in the league. Because, listen, you know it's a topic. Guys are going to be talking about it.
Right.
You know, the major leaguers are going to be like, what'd you think of that? You know, they're going to be talking about it. If they haven't experienced it, they're going to want to know their opinion on it. And if Torkelson isn't going to look at Miguel Cabrera, who might not be there next year, he could be gone, in bad reference, but another player on the Tigers, and be like, it's not that big of a deal, dude. I don't think it's going to even be in their head. I think they're professionals. They're going to figure it out. Pitchers, I don't know. I mean, it could be a little bit harder for the older school guys.
They're going to have to train differently, because more of them are going to get hurt initially because they're rushing things and what.
I think it's going to be a little bit harder sell, but listen, it's going to happen. I personally think it's going to be a little bit tougher talking about the outfield stuff. I think that's going to be the third in line to go, maybe much to dismay of Theo Epstein and the excitement of the game.
So wait, you think that the shift is first?
I think the infield shift would come first before the outfield shift.
And then is the pitch clock before the
I think the pitch clock would come first,
So it goes pitch clock, infield shift, then outfield rules.
Yep. And there's possibility that the pitch clock could come this year, I believe.
I still think the infield shift could be taken care of itself if you took the macho crap out of the game.
Yeah.
And just bunt it. I mean, again, I still think it's like stupid that you don't just, you just bunt it until they change what they do.
Well, I saw something in the over-under on Joey Gallo, like 13 bunt singles this year.
Go for it. I say all the power to it. I believe in market economies, and I think the same should exist in baseball. Take out the stupid male ego.
The most important thing is baseball is back.
Yeah,
that is the important thing.
Awesome. It's great stuff. We've had a great run. Actually, I really enjoyed some of our off-season stuff.
It's going to be nice to actually talk baseball.
I know. It is. And we got to get watching. And we're doing all this stuff. I mean, we sort of changed our cable, and we don't know what we're doing. I don't know what we have.
Dude, you gotta get Uzu TV.
Uzu TV. How do you spell that?
UZZU.TV.
And that has
It's like, I call it pirate TV. You get any baseball game you want, and it's not, you know, FBI ain't coming knocking, or I've had it for 2 years now. It's the best deal I've had. So listen, you want to sponsor yourself on the show, Uzu TV?
Come on over.
Show your face.
This has been episode 70. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.